Hello, I'm Goldie Sayers, Olympian and former javelin thrower.
And I'm Ollie Hind, Paralympian and former swimmer.
And welcome back to The Inside at the UK Sports Institute podcast. Series 2 of the pod focused on everything to do with female athlete health and performance. And today we're going to continue that theme.
In this episode, we're joined by Paralympian Charlotte Henshaw. Charlotte is a remarkable athlete, winning medals at London 2012 and Rio 2016 before transitioning to paracanoe and winning gold at the Tokyo 2020 Games.
And Charlotte's openly discussed living with endometriosis, a condition affecting 1 in 10 women, often causing severe pain. This pain typically occurs in the lower abdomen or back, especially during periods. Endometriosis involves tissue similar to the womb lining growing in places like the ovaries and fallopian tubes. It's often mistaken for period cramps or IBS, and the pain can be debilitating, significantly impacting daily life and athletic training. Charlotte's had a long journey with her symptoms and diagnosis. I'm delighted she's agreed to chat with us today. Hello, Charlotte.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So thanks for being on, but I'd love to know, when did you first notice that things didn't necessarily feel right?
Yeah, I mean, it affects so many people in so many different ways. But for me, I had been having symptoms for about 8 years, but I didn't know that they were endometriosis when they first started. It's only post-diagnosis that, you know, you start to put the things together and realize that those symptoms that I was having back when I was swimming. I remember one episode vividly competing in Scotland, in Glasgow, and I had to withdraw from the final because I was just laid in bed in the hotel, just couldn't move. And I thought it, like you just said earlier, it was IBS. I thought it was just a really bad reaction to something I'd eaten. But it turns out that it was very much the symptoms that turned out to be endometriosis. And I was diagnosed in 2020. And I mean, I retired swimming in 2016, so it was certainly before that. And It's a horrendous disease, and unfortunately one that can't be cured but can be managed. So that's where I'm at the moment.
And am I right in thinking that you were first diagnosed potentially as having IBS and not endometriosis?
Yeah, I think my diagnosis story is typical of many women. Like I said, I'd had symptoms for a long, long time, unbeknownst to me, that they were endometriosis. And the first time that word came into my consciousness was I'd been sent to see a female health physio because I was having some problems with pelvic floor when I was lifting in the gym. This is when I'd moved to paracanoe. And this lady, I was seeing her via Zoom during the first lockdown. I never actually met her in person. And she said to me, you know, just give me a potted history of what you've been feeling. And her daughter had been diagnosed with endometriosis. And she said to me, have you ever heard of this? I wonder if this is what you might have. And, you know, I've been backs and forwards to the doctors, seen gastric specialists, had colonoscopies, and that diagnosis had come back, it's IBS. But until Gillian had said to me, this could be endometriosis, then I was referred to a gynecology specialist. And that's when the ball started rolling on getting my firm diagnosis.
Wow. So you maybe never have been diagnosed if you'd not met that physio.
No, absolutely not. And I think what had really sparked the first initial thought that the symptoms I was feeling even in the gym, aside from the obvious pelvic floor symptoms of sort of pain, deep pelvic pain, was the Smart Her roadshows that UKSI used to put on. And we went off to Loughborough as a canoeing team and sat there with our notebooks, and we were kind of told that we should be starting to track our menstrual cycle around training first and foremost. And when I was starting to write things down, I thought, well, this is a bit strange. Things seem to be occurring at the same time every month. And so it has to be something linked to my menstrual cycle, which is why then I got referred to female health physio, because we wondered if that might have an effect on how I was training and all of that. And so it was certainly UKSI as well as that female health physio that put that spark, that little idea in my head that perhaps this is the route that we need to be going down and what we need to be advocating for research and sort of knowledge about in my cycle.
And how were you managing the pain at the time? Because I always find with pain, it's such an individual thing. And perhaps going to doctors, you know, lots of women would say, I'm in, you know, incredible pain during my period. But obviously being an international athlete, perhaps your pain tolerance may well be higher than many other people. But how were you sort of managing it at the time?
I mean, I was just cracking on and as best I could. And funnily enough, my symptoms tended to be worse during the middle of my cycle. It was during ovulation that I was really struggling. The time that I was on my period was weirdly probably the least painful of the 4-week cycle, which again just goes to show how differently it affects each individual. And during that time of the month, I would know that I would be in more pain. I couldn't have physio on my hip flexors because any time the physio tried to touch anyway, sort of my lower abdomen, it was just the most painful thing in the world. And some days I just wouldn't be able to go to training. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't stand up straight. And in a sport like paracanoe, where a lot of our daily motion is rotational, that was the most horrendous movement for me, sitting, leaning over in a boat, cramped in a tiny little cockpit, trying to rotate around your hips. For me, it was horrendously painful. So sometimes I just wouldn't go training because I just knew that I couldn't do anything about it. So it was less a case of managing it. It was either just cracking on and pushing through the pain or being stopped in my tracks and not being able to do anything at all.
And obviously sitting in a canoe, your hip flexors are going to get incredibly tight. So
yeah,
potentially there'd be a massive performance impact of having this condition as well.
Absolutely. And it not only has effect sort of physically, it's the energy that it's taking to manage that pain. And at the time before my diagnosis, it was the worry of the unknown. I didn't know what was going on with my body. I didn't know if we were missing something else. I was starting to think of all these scenarios of why I was in so much pain, and yet no test or scan was coming back with any answer, because unfortunately the only way at the moment to firmly diagnose endometriosis is to have a surgery, which as an athlete was the last thing that I wanted to do. And eventually it got to the point where we thought that having that time out of training to have the surgery would actually be of a benefit rather than a hindrance, because it would give us the answers. It would give us the knowledge and the tools to manage whatever it was that was causing it. And so it was a really tricky period. And certainly I found that post-diagnosis, which was right in the middle of the first year of COVID, I just came round from the surgery with just a sense of relief, which I think is the most bizarre thing, when somebody's just told you that you've got a condition that you're going to have for the rest of your life. You shouldn't really feel relieved at that. But because I'd got answers, because I finally, you know, the reason why I was feeling the way that I was feeling, I read it a lot. A lot of women feel so relieved that they finally got a diagnosis, so then they can move forward with whatever that is for them.
And obviously you've been through a huge journey with it, but do you feel like you could talk openly about it through your swimming career and then obviously into paracanoe?
When I was swimming, I didn't really know what I was dealing with. So I voiced when I was feeling under the weather. And, you know, mine and Ollie's coach, Glenn Smith, he is such an understanding guy, and he would just, okay, whatever you need, we'll manage, we'll adapt. But because I didn't know it was related to my menstrual health, it wasn't something that I was shying away from. I just didn't have the knowledge to have that conversation. Whereas now in canoeing, certainly we make such a huge effort as a squad to talk about menstrual health, not just me when there's a diagnosed problem, everybody. We mark on our training plan, menstrual cycle, when we're due on our period, when we're not. And, you know, we do our body comps at the same time every month because we weren't doing that before. And so we've tried to make a very open dialogue between the athletes and lots of male staff members, to be honest, and they've been brilliant in supporting and facilitating those conversations. And I think that's hugely important. And I certainly felt like I wanted to share my diagnosis, because when I was knowing, you know, that I was going to go in for a surgery, I was looking around on social media, as you do, trying to find other athletes that had gone through the same thing. And there wasn't that many that had shared their story. And so I was just going off and reading just generic information that said, you know, you might not be able to walk down the stairs properly for 6 weeks. And I thought, well, I can't do that when I'm training for a Paralympic Games. But actually, when I spoke to athletes, they were back on the bike after 10 days. You know, that knowledge of your world with that circumstance was so important. And I thought, well, if they could have helped, they helped me so much, the few that I did find. So I wanted to sort of potentially be that person for somebody else. And I'm so glad that we're seeing more and more sports people talk about it, because it just gives people this wealth of knowledge that is so, so important.
And you talked about this surgery and the huge relief. afterwards, what was the recovery like? Obviously, you're back on the bike within 6 weeks, but yeah. With that knowledge of what it was that you were dealing with, what did sort of training and recovery look like after that?
So I had my surgery in December 2020, which was obviously after we knew that the Games were going to be delayed until 2021. So not the way that I wanted to spend my winter leading into a Games, out, you know, having a surgery, not being in the boat. But they'd said that it would be roughly 3 weeks before I was allowed back in the boat. So I had it done literally just before Christmas. That's, you know, the immense privilege that we have as athletes is that we had a little bit more freedom to decide when I had my surgery, which not everybody has. And so we tried to time it that part of my recovery was over Christmas. So that Christmas was very uncomfortable. I think I spent that Christmas dinner with, you know, the baggiest clothes on that you could imagine because of all my scars and incisions and things. But I think the second week in January, I was back in the boat, which, you know, felt absolutely horrendous because obviously cut through my abs and it was horrendous. But it actually wasn't as bad as I thought it might be. And it only took me about 6 weeks to be back to full training, which was, you know, which was amazing. It's testament to how well we're looked after, I'm for sure.
If you don't mind me asking, what do they actually do in the surgery?
So you get told that obviously you speak to the surgeon beforehand and you agree how extensive they can be. And because of the time of where I decided to have my surgery, I only wanted it to be exploratory. I didn't want any endometriosis removing because they either cut it out or they burn it away, essentially, which prolongs the recovery period. And because we had a very small window and we just wanted answers, I'd said to them, you know, if you need to take it, of course do, use your judgment, but I would prefer it to be on the smaller side of the recovery time. And so it was a keyhole surgery, incision through my belly button, one on my lower left side so they can get a good look all around the abdomen. And yeah, then obviously it's individual as to what they do. For me, they identified endometriosis lesions all over my uterus on the right side, which is where I'd be getting the most pain. My ovary is pretty much squashed. The left one sitting in a lovely little bit of space. The right one is sort of, you could barely see it's there because there's so much swelling and tension from the endometriosis deposits pulling everything. I've also got it on the tube that runs from my kidney to my bladder. So it does affect my bladder sometimes. And that would require a much bigger surgery to remove. So that wouldn't have been able to be done there anyway. So mine was a relatively easy op, just kind of looking in, taking a few pictures, but it can be pretty extensive for some people.
And now you know what you do, how do you kind of manage symptoms and perhaps training with you and your support team?
I was put on the pill, which is a typical way of people being dealt with endometriosis. But actually for me, it does help my symptoms. Like I said earlier, I was getting pain during ovulation. So being on the pill takes that away, which has helped that sort of mid-cycle pain. Now I know that when I have my pill breaks, that's going to be a really tricky time of, you know, the month or 9 weeks, because I do sort of back-to-backing on my pills to manage that pain. So it's just given us more information, I suppose, as to how, where we take the hits on my energy level, my pain levels, and so we can plan for them. And so when I know that I'm potentially going to feel on my worst, I potentially don't go in the boat as much, or I reduce intensity. I go for a swim because obviously non-weight, sort of nice and supported in the water. Acupuncture really helps me in and around sort of hips, back. I use a little portable TENS machine, which I can wear under my clothes for travel or, you know, all those sort of things. And I think the biggest thing for me, and you'll know as being an athlete, is I was constantly worried that I was potentially not at my 100% on any given day. And I would beat myself up about that. And I would try my best and know that I wouldn't be at my best. So now it's kind of given me the grace with myself to be okay that if I'm feeling rubbish on a particular day, I'm having a flare, maybe 40% of my usual is all I've got that day. And that's absolutely fine. And I'm a lot kinder to myself because of that knowledge. I think constantly trying to work through pain and push through pain, it doesn't help. It doesn't give you any better training that day. And actually, would I have been better just staying at home and doing some yoga. And so it's allowed me to be kinder to myself, which I think all athletes can be sometimes need to be kinder to ourselves.
Absolutely. And how do you plan around competing? I certainly would always look in Olympic year and see where the Olympics falls in terms of my cycle. And obviously that changes the further out you're looking. And obviously I wasn't dealing with the kind of symptoms you're dealing with. How do you plan your competition schedule and training around your symptoms?
It's funny you ask that, because obviously hoping to be in Paris at the end of the summer, and my 4-day prill break was going to fall the 4 days right before I raced. The fifth day would be race day at the games. And knowing how I respond on my pill breaks, I thought, I can't do that. I'd just be good for nothing. And so we've actually done some manipulation of my pill now so that it's moved my cycle away from the games dates. Fortunately, being on the pill, you can do that. It's a little bit easier, but it's planning. It's making sure that we're looking ahead and managing what we can. I've got all my strategies in place. Our physio is brilliant. She knows what works for me, what doesn't, in terms of helping me facilitate that movement. And like I said earlier, it's being armed with as much information as possible. I mean, obviously, as athletes, we love to be able to control everything, and it's being able to control the bits that we potentially can. Of course, my body could decide one day randomly that it's going to be suffering, but I can't know that in advance. So it's just having all the tools in my tool belt to then extract them when I need them, and hope that it's not on a day that, you know, is the biggest race of the year. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, how about fingers crossed for you? But presumably you've competed at a bad time of the month, presumably.
Yeah, well, the kicker of switching my pill from the games was that the best time to do it was just this weekend gone, which was our selection for the games. So, but it was better to move it earlier than leave it later, because obviously you don't know how your body's going to respond to that kind of manipulation. So I didn't feel 100% leading into the selection last week, but, you know, the tools that we've tried and tested over the years left me actually in a fairly decent place, and it wasn't as bad as I potentially expected. So, you know, things can happen with anything around racing, and like, you'll know, we'll get prepared to deal with what we can and control what we can. And sometimes I'm not going to be able to have any say in it. And so hopefully on a race day, the adrenaline would just kick in, and I'd be all right for hopefully under 60 seconds. I'd be all right.
So are you telling me that you still won at 40%?
I was a bit more than 40%. I was fine. I was a bit better. But yeah, selection went well. And hoping to get selected to the games in a couple of weeks' time.
So, you know, that's confidence building for the Olympics. You'll know when you're not in that period of your cycle, you're going to be on fire in Paris, no doubt, Charlotte.
I hope so. There's all just all the other things to contend with. But yeah, we'll not worry about that yet.
That sounds easy compared to this. But you talked earlier about having talked to a few other athletes who suffered from endometriosis.
Yeah.
What did you learn from them? And was that super useful as well?
Oh, so useful. I mean, it just shows you how brilliant and also very small the British sporting world is, because I'd mentioned it to somebody at canoeing, and our media officer got wind of it, and then she knew somebody at cycling who obviously then knew Eleanor Barker, who'd been very open with her experience with endometriosis. And I mean, I've never met Eleanor, but she said, yeah, I passed my number on, and she called me the night before my surgery just to give me little tips and tricks that I wouldn't have known about. You know, go with a pillow to put under the seatbelt so it doesn't rub your stitches when you come home, and try this, try that. And I hadn't even, you know, known about any of that. And she was so generous with her time and willing to talk. I'd messaged an Australian para swimmer who I knew had been very vocal about it, and she gave me amazing advice over Instagram. And yeah, I think now there's a few more people that have been vocal about it. And it just creates this network of people that have maybe a few different ideas that have helped them, or, you know, just a bit of a solidarity that, you know, you can talk about your issues and people will understand it. Because I think that's part of the problem with endometriosis is people don't understand what it is, and they just think, oh, it's this painful period, just take some paracetamol and you'll be fine. And okay, maybe that is what people think it is, but anybody's period shouldn't be that painful, whether you've got endometriosis or not. And so to kind of flippantly disregard it as painful periods, I mean, that's not something we should be disregarding either, in my opinion. So yeah, it's very important that we continue to educate people. So I'm very proud to be part of that little group of athletes that are talking about it.
And do you think the conversation is changing now around female athlete health? And obviously you talked about some of the roadshows that the UKSI are doing. Are you finding benefit, and your, you know, female teammates, are they finding huge benefit from those conversations?
We absolutely are. I mean, at Canoeing, we've got a women's health WhatsApp group, and we share interesting podcasts, interesting articles that we've found and read, and that's pretty active. And our doc and our physio are both involved in that. So it's just opened that conversation up. And the fact that we can talk to our male S&C coach about things like that, I mean, it's opened a conversation, and the other participant has to be willing and they have to be comfortable. But I think the more that we can encourage people to openly talk about it, if they're comfy to do so, it knocks down that taboo. It removes that kind of embarrassment of talking about something that happens to most people, if you're lucky to have a menstrual cycle, of course. And so I think the conversation is shifting, and I think we're moving in the right direction. I still think there's a lot more that we can do, but, you know, we're certainly moving in the right way. And, you know, hopefully more people will become comfortable talking about it and sharing, and that will hopefully have a knock-on effect for future athletes that come in and perhaps don't have to go through those awkward conversations and just can come in and be completely open. That's what we want.
And Ollie, I want to bring you in here, because you trained with Charlotte for many years when she was a swimmer. Can you imagine dealing with this alongside your training and competing?
No, absolutely not. And I'll be completely honest, until Charlotte kind of spoke about her experience, I'd never heard of it. So again, I think like Charlotte said throughout the podcast, it's just having those conversations, isn't it? And kind of just breaking down that stigma and taboo, like you said, Charlotte, and having those open conversations, educating people like me that obviously is not too well versed in this kind of area. But it's quite strange for me thinking back, because going back to what Charlotte said at the beginning about being in Glasgow, the story about being in Glasgow, I actually remember that. I think it's more the fact that you didn't have the answers. That's something obviously is not easy for anyone, but swim is not easy anyway. So to kind of throw that on top of everything, I can imagine was really, really tough.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? And, you know, coming from an athlete's mindset, like we've all kind of experienced, you want to know every single detail mm-hmm. about every single thing. And so when something comes in that you have no knowledge about it, you feel like you just, your body's doing these things that you can't explain, and no one else seems to be able to explain it. It just throws you off completely. And I think that for me, that was the hardest thing. It was that I know that I'm feeling this way, but no one's telling me why. And so it gets to the point where you start to think, well, am I feeling that way? Am I exaggerating how in pain I am? And the longer that you don't get clarity and an answer, the more that you think that. And then it becomes this thing that you're constantly worrying about, alongside all of the other things that you're trying to think about and manage as an athlete. And it's the same for a lot of conditions that are difficult to diagnose and, you know, slightly less understood. And, you know, hopefully starting a conversation about something like endometriosis can have a trickle effect into other things that potentially are slightly more tricky to understand and know about. And we can start to get the right research and the right funding to make it easier to know about them.
Do you remember Charlotte ever complaining of any symptoms, Ollie, when you were training together?
To be honest, nothing kind of specific, because obviously I know Charlotte as a person, an athlete, and, you know, she wants the best out of herself every single training session, every single competition. So it kind of just would get on with things, really. But Charlotte's already mentioned I coach Glenn. Obviously, I think give a big shout out to Glenn. I think he's probably the perfect person to have kind of dealt with that scenario, because he is someone that's, you know, very understanding and willing to change things, and I guess looks at an athlete holistically, as not just a robot. So I think Glenn probably deserves a big shout out for dealing with those times when the answers weren't there and weren't clear. Yeah, so like I said, I think it must have been really tough, really difficult. Like thinking back to the Glasgow example, I guess thinking back, those things kind of make sense now, and everything kind of, it adds up.
And I think as well, because I didn't know what was going on, so I just kind of would just go, oh, I'm just not feeling it today. I don't know why, but maybe it's this reason or that reason. And to be honest, the only reason I brought up Glasgow, because that's the only real kind of standout thing that actually affected me to the point where I withdrew from a competition.
Yeah.
I'd raced in the morning and I went back to the hotel and I thought, I feel horrendously bad. Mm-hmm. Spoke to the doctor and they said, oh, you know, don't race this evening. But every other time, it's not standout enough to even remember. So I don't think there was ever any clear cut point where it had such a huge effect. And as I got older and I'd obviously got endo for longer, the symptoms increased. So actually probably the time that it affected me the most was by the time I'd moved over to canoeing, and maybe the change in sport, the change in the way that my body moved, and the fact that the endo had progressed. Perhaps it's since I've moved sports that it's been more prominent, for sure.
Well, it's amazing how much you managed to kind of get on with things, as you like to put it, and hopefully educating a few more athletes along the way will help a lot of other sufferers, because I'm sure there's many people out there, if the stats are correct, and it's 1 in 10 women. So
I think it's 1 in 10 diagnosed, but I'm sure there are many more. I mean, when I shared it on Instagram, when I'd had my surgery, I can't tell you the amount of people that sent me a DM saying, oh, what symptoms did you have? I feel this, or I think somebody's mentioned this to me. Where do I go? So I think there's probably a lot of people who are just cracking on with stuff, which actually potentially needs looking into. And if it's nothing, brilliant. But and that's what I would try and say to people, is try and be armed with as much knowledge as you possibly can about your own body. And then you can start to identify those patterns. And also you can then help medical professionals to do the right thing. Because I think in endo conversations, a lot of times medical professionals get a bit of a beating from people saying they didn't do this and they didn't do that. It's such a tricky condition to diagnose, because the symptoms can mimic so many other things. So of course, you're not going to send everybody for a surgery when there's other things that you can explore first. So I think the more information that you can give them, you can help them to sort of tick things off the list and go, actually, I don't think it's this. Let's look at this, and be a bit more focused about the approach, because like I said, it's a hard one to diagnose, and it's, you know, notoriously short on diagnosis methods, if you like. And so I would say advocate for yourself with as much information as possible and have those conversations with people, because then we will get more people diagnosed and hopefully feeling a little bit better.
Well, you're absolutely helping with the information, Charlotte. So thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck with managing it all in the future.
Thank you so much. Thank you for facilitating the conversation. It really hopefully has a huge impact. So thank you.
A massive thank you to Charlotte for joining us and sharing her very personal story.
If you want to learn more about the UK Sports Institute or Paralympics GB, follow them on socials via UK Sports Inst or at Paralympics GB. Follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode, leave a review, or if you're listening on Spotify, share your thoughts in the poll.
Until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll catch up soon.